Welcome back to another episode of What Do I Know with me, Joanne Pei. And what I'm about to say right now is probably going to sound very boomerish. But we've got in our studio today our very first Generation Z guest. She's born in the year 2000 and is part of what some would call Singapore's version of the Beckhams. She's the only daughter, but not the only child, of Singapore's soccer legend Fandi Ahmad and South African model Wendy Jacobs. Well, she's been on shoots with her mum since a young age, and she also went on to win two titles at the New Paper New Face competition in 2014. So, it's really no surprise that she's a model today. But, do you know she's also a rising singer-songwriter? Now, that didn't quite run in the family. So, if you think that having famous parents gives her an advantage, well, maybe, maybe not. Let's hear it from Iman Fadi. Hi, Iman.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
Thanks for joining me in this small little place. And, you know, I'm a little bit caught off guard because I've never had like a Generation Z guest in the studio before. And I think it's important, right, that for us to be able to talk to different people and to learn also from the young people. And with you, I guess, the question that you probably get asked a lot is your famous parents. Mm-hmm. And I get this question too, because people ask me, oh, how do your children feel? Mm-hmm. You know that their parents are famous and all that. And I always tend to think that I don't think they feel any different because they don't know any different. Mm-hmm. But that's me, right, representing them to say it. I guess now you can probably answer this question because, you know, I'm curious too, right? Like, what was it like growing up with famous parents? Like, did you even know that they were that famous?
Not really, actually. So, I used to live in Indonesia when I was younger. So, my growing up ages were, when I was there, all I could remember was climbing up trees.
Wow.
You know, doing a lot of sports. So, I knew that sports was somehow in my blood. And then when I moved back to Singapore when I was about 11 and I went into primary school, secondary school, that was when it kind of started. You know, oh, like your brothers play football. Oh, you know, your dad's like a big name. And then when we would go to malls, that was when the pictures started or like the questions or the whispers. And slowly I began to understand, okay, something's up.
Okay.
And I looked up my family.
Like Google.
I actually did, yeah. I Googled, and then that's how I learned a little bit more of what was happening here in Singapore and what my dad did and, you know, the legacy that he brought for us all. But to answer your question about how I feel, you know, being the daughter of these two amazing, you know, people, yeah, kind of similarly to how your kids would respond, oh, nothing, not that much, because it's something we've grown into, something that we've only known.
Yes, you don't know otherwise.
Yes, exactly. But I will say I feel very proud. I feel very, I feel very proud to be in this family, to have a family that's so supportive. With such a big name also comes a lot of pressure. So it can be both good and bad, but it depends on how I myself, you know, carry myself and also try to live up to that, but also be myself at the same time.
I've also always wondered how my children feel, but they are probably a little bit too young to articulate that. Like, how do they feel when, you know, we are out in public sometimes and, you know, someone comes to us and asks for a photo or people are like pointing and chattering?
Yeah.
Do you remember how you felt when you were not very familiar with what was going on and then all that was happening?
Yeah, so at first I was quite weirded out by it. I was like, oh, why are random people just, you know, I was young. Why are they just taking pictures? But then I somehow enjoyed it when I was younger because I guess because my mom was a model and I've always been into, very curious about fashion and, you know, to see a camera, I'm like, okay.
Oh.
But then in my teens, that was when I started to not really like it, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it was just because I was trying to figure myself out and I wanted a little privacy sometimes. And when you can't get that, it can feel a little bit scary in a sense. And then the only place that I can feel privacy is probably in my home. But I want to be like everybody else and enjoy going out with friends, enjoy, you know, going to the mall, having dinner with my family without having pictures taken. But I mean, it comes with, you know, everything that my parents have done. And I'm very grateful for that. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it's also very pressurizing when you are, well, the daughter of famous parents and good looking parents too. And then there's always this, I don't know, this pressure. Do you ever feel like people will be like, oh, you know, are their kids good looking? And like, you know, is the daughter beautiful? And do you ever feel that sort of pressure? Like that you have to look good and you got to be a certain way?
Of course, I felt that pressure. And I don't think it also just goes down to the looks, but also of what we do. Does it live up to what my parents did? You know, so a lot of that I still carry now, because even, you know, being in the social media industry and also with technology all around, people will talk. People will say what they want to say. But and that can, you know, get to me. But it also depends on how I take that and turn it into a positive and try to ignore it. But yeah, I do feel the pressure of, oh no, am I doing enough? And I still feel that to this day, even though I'm doing so many things. I still feel, oh no, I think something else could be better. Something more needs to be done. Yeah.
Have you got a specific example of something that happened to you that you feel like, you know, terrible about, and then how did you overcome that?
I think this happened a lot, like where I was trying to figure myself out, and a lot of hate actually came when I was between 12 and 14, 15.
Oh dear.
And that was where I was also trying to navigate, oh my gosh, what do I do? And this was when I was in secondary school. So
what sort of hate was it?
It was a lot of, yeah, oh, you're just the daughter of, you know, Fandi Ahmad, like, you got this because of him. You're here because of him. And that was actually part of the reason I joined the new paper, New Face.
Right.
It was something that I was very interested in, first of all, but also besides doing my track and field, because I was a track and field athlete at that time, I wanted to dive into the fashion industry. And I did it myself in a way that I signed up, didn't think that I would get in. And when I got in, I told my mom, actually, and she didn't believe me until I showed her that I got the call back for the audition. And we went together, and that's how it kind of started. Okay, this is now how I'm going to take my steps. I'm going to do everything by myself and then show my parents. And that was actually how my music industry, how I came into the career started as well. I hid the music. I hid what I was doing just because I didn't want to feel that they were the ones putting me there, or in a way to show people that I was doing this by myself first. Yeah. But I mean, people will say what they want to say.
Exactly. And I guess before we go there, I kind of am curious about your childhood, because you mentioned that you were in Indonesia and you were climbing trees and all that.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that experience. Like, how long were you there for? And
I was there for 4 years, and all I could remember was just being a child. You know, it was one of the happiest times I would feel in my early childhood days. I just remember going out with friends, not caring about anything, just being a child, having fun, going to school. I would always stay back in school just to play around.
How many siblings did you have then?
Four brothers.
Oh, four brothers. All five of you were there.
All five of us, yeah. But of course, all of us were younger. And that was also our closest times as a family, I feel.
Oh.
Yeah. Because now everybody's, you know, grown up, have work overseas and in and out of the house. Yeah.
How long were you there for?
4 years.
4 years. And then you said that, you know, you were in track and field after that. Like, did any of that, you know, tree climbing, I don't know, river swimming sort of helped you? Or was it actually your father's influence?
Track and field, honestly, I don't know how I got into track and field. It must have been some kind of like PE thing, and then all of a sudden I was into track and field. But sports has always been something that I've always liked. Yeah, so I'm not sure if that was a genetic thing or just an interest, but my whole family just enjoys sports.
So do you all play sports together? I guess what I'm curious about is whether your dad sort of dragged everybody and like, okay, let's go kick balls or let's go do something, you know, on a certain day. Like,
I mean, I feel like that has happened for sure a lot of times, because I remember when we just came back to Singapore, or maybe we were here for a holiday, we went to play futsal. Uh-huh. Near East Coast. And we would always ride bikes there too. So I remember just like going on family day outs doing that. Or maybe swimming, you know, in our swimming pool. We will always be active on when we can. On the weekends.
As a family.
But football was one thing that we were all interested in. Because I used to play as well. And I remember my dad was helping out here and there with the coach for the girls team in Indonesia. Yeah,
I have no ball sense. I feel like football is one of those really tough sport.
Really?
For me. Yeah. I mean, like if it's netball, anything with my hands, I feel like I can control it, right? But anything with my legs, I'm just like, it's not going where I want it to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
So football is a hard sport.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what is it? Is it hard or is it just
just a sport to me, I guess.
Right.
It comes naturally. I don't know how to explain it. Yeah, so I guess
everyone in your family too, right?
Isn't it?
Your brothers are in soccer now.
Mm-hmm.
So then, I heard a little bird tell me that you've been on a cover with your mom at the age of like 7.
Mm-hmm. I think it was called Family Magazine or Mother Magazine. I don't know, but I have the cover on my phone actually. I have a picture of it.
Was that your first photo shoot?
I'm not sure, but I think so. But it was with my other brother as well.
Or your first impression of, like your first memory of a photo shoot.
I don't remember anything from that shoot, honestly. Yeah, but it was a really, really, you know, something so memorable. When I have shoots with my family, I always think it's nice to have pictures with them because we don't take a lot ourselves. It's called Family Magazine.
Let me see. Oh, this is the one. You were 7.
Yeah, I think so. Because that was the youngest that I could find.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's your brother?
That's my younger brother, Ilhan.
Well, your mom's really strong to carry both of you. Because this little bird also told me that you were a natural at that age. Did you know? Were you aware? Did anyone say it to you?
I don't think so. I didn't know.
You didn't know that you were a natural?
I didn't know, yeah. Ooh. But when I got older, I started going to more shoots, and my mom would come along. Sometimes she would be joining as well. And I think that's when I started to learn. To learn what is my angles, what do I like, what do I not like in, you know, the fashion photo shoot world. But I just loved everything.
Would you say that your first foray into modeling is after New Paper, New Face?
Yeah, I would say that my first independent move into it was when I was 14 and that started.
Mm. So, you know, now you're still a model and we know that a lot has changed, right? Mm-hmm. Since your mom was a model. And I think some of the practices have also improved. Like, were you aware, like, did your mom ever give you any advice? Were you aware of the difference in the modeling practices then and now?
Mm-hmm. Definitely, because my mom would always, before a shoot, she would always tell me, and my dad too, no matter what industry I'm in, always be humble, respect everybody, no matter what position they are, even if they're, you know, helping, you know, to clean the building and you walk past them, just smile. I think something that he really stressed on was also just be humble, remember where you came from, because everybody is just trying to be, you know, themselves, have a good time. And my mom always said, always be on time. And that is something I carry with me all the time. Yeah.
Okay. You know, the modeling industry can be very cruel and tough, right? Because, I mean, I've heard, I've also interviewed Fiona Fusi from in season 1.
Yeah.
And, you know, she talked about the auditions that she had to go to and, you know, how models are being treated, right? What is it like for you?
I remember.
Have you always had great experiences, or was there any any stories to share?
Yeah. So I mean, there is a huge difference from how things were before and how things are now, and it can be from the models or also from the the photographers or the creators around what the spread would look like. And yeah, in the modeling industry, I've had great moments, a great team that I'm very fortunate, you know, to have great experiences. But there has been a couple that has been quite eye-opening, if I may put it nicely, because I remember going to this audition and I wasn't a skinny girl, and I'm not tall, you know, and I think everybody else there were tall models. More of them were light-skinned, I would say, and I believe that I probably didn't get the job just because I was a little bit more bulky. I was more of an athletic build, and that's how I started to tell the difference between how the modeling industry is starting to change from then and now. Because now we see people of different color, different race, different body builds, and that's amazing, and different skin conditions too. And I'm so grateful for that. But of course, sometimes, I mean, this one time, there's also photographers that you don't know the intentions, and that is something you always have to be careful of. And that's what I've learned, you know, working with people, meeting models, talking to models as well, of how things can change.
So what advice would you give for someone, you know, younger who wants to enter the industry and be a model this day and age, I guess, right?
Yeah. This day and age, I feel like it's a little bit better just because everybody, you know, is more aware. And with social media, there's always things popping up, news, and that's how we kind of like keep up with what's happening. But you know, if you want to be a model, you want to go into the fashion industry, go for it. Just do your research, you know, make sure you have the right support system, because it can be also quite grueling, not just because of the industry, but I feel that I hurt myself a little bit sometimes when I get too deep. When I was younger and getting into it so much, and at such a young age, I didn't realize the toll that it would take on me mentally and physically. And that's when I knew that I needed the support from friends, or just learning a little bit more about the industry and the other side, that it's not just, you know, tall, skinny models, but also, hey, there's another side where everybody is accepted. Because I started to look at myself and be like, okay, why am I not like this? Why am I not tall? Why am I not good enough? Yeah. But I believe that right now things have changed, and that's amazing.
So the advice that you would give to young, aspiring models would be to have more confidence?
Have confidence.
In how they are?
Have support. I would say whether it's people in the industry and they know the work, you know, that's great, but also there's support out of the industry. If something goes wrong, or if something, you know, or if you don't, you start to feel that you're uncomfortable, you have support outside of the industry to give you a clearer, like, mindset or a different perspective. I feel that that always helps.
You know, the challenge is always, I feel, for someone who has never been in the industry, for example, to be able to assess a situation and draw the line between what is professional and what is not okay. You know, because sometimes when you're young and then you enter, let's say you go for a photo shoot, right? And then the photographer asks you to do something. You're like, is that, am I not being professional if I say no?
Yeah.
Right? But you don't know where the boundary is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I guess that is the difficult part, and that's also the part where I worry if I were to have my daughter says she want to go modeling, right? That, you know, how do you protect yourself? How do you know where to draw the line? And that fear, right, of losing the job if you say no, because just because you're uncomfortable, and whether this discomfort that you're feeling is you being unprofessional, You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
do you relate to that?
I can relate to that definitely, but I feel that right now, if you feel that way, you know, always be sure of what you want, and go for what you want. And if you believe that something doesn't feel right and you should say no, step in and say no, because you have a voice too.
Mm.
You know, I understand that this is a job, but many other jobs are gonna come along the way, and with people that will accept you and with people who will listen to you. Because just because you're a model doesn't mean that you should not be heard. You should be heard too, and you should be accepted and respected, just like everybody else working.
I think for me personally, I would feel that regardless of what job it is, if you're uncomfortable and perhaps this discomfort is you being unprofessional, even if it is, right? That, well, actually, you shouldn't be uncomfortable with this, let's say, right? That, you know, we should all also learn to respect that emotion and that feeling that the person is having, instead of judge this person and go like, okay, then in that case, I'm not going to use you next time, right? Like, sometimes it's also about educating people and allowing them a chance to make mistakes. It could be a mistake, right? Today, whatever I'm experiencing, I'm saying no to this because I'm uncomfortable. Perhaps it's not the right thing right now, but I learn, right, as I go along. And I think this is also the advice I would give to young girls, you know, who are coming into the industry, is that not to be afraid to lose the job. Because like you said, you know, you lose this one job, but have faith, right? That
there'll be
other jobs that come.
Exactly. And I love what you said about, you know, learning more, because as you say no, or as you turn down a job or whatever it is, you will start to know what you like and what you agree with and what you're comfortable with as well. And, you know, whether you turn up and you didn't know it was a swimsuit shoot, let's say, and you feel uncomfortable, okay, then you know next time maybe you don't want to do swimsuit shoots.
Or maybe you ask before you...
Yeah, or maybe you ask before you show up.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever had to learn it the hard way?
Not really. I mean, usually when we do shoots, I do like to find out what it's for, where it's going to be used, what am I doing. But I would say at the auditions, sometimes you never know what can be expected. You know, we all usually give our headshots and all that, but sometimes we have to go down and do like an audition, which is just basically standing there, greeting. Yeah.
Do you ever feel like you're just an ornament?
In modeling?
Especially, yeah.
I try not to feel that way. I used to have that thought of like, oh, what if people just think we're mannequins, you know, and we have no creativity
and you're
or
like
anything
being,
like that.
In a way, objectified, isn't it? Like, how do you, do you ever feel, I don't know, angry or like any emotion about that? Or have you ever felt that way, in fact?
I honestly don't feel like I have felt that way. And I think this is also, this just shows the difference between how the industry was and how the industry is right now. Because I'm so grateful that I've been in the industry that's been very accepting of everybody. Although that it has its ups and downs, you know, I've never felt objectified in that way. Sure, maybe once or twice, but nothing that I can pinpoint and be like, oh my gosh, no, I'm never doing that again.
Where do you get your support from? You talk friends, about that support network, right?
So yeah, friends that are actually outside of the industry, because they allow me to see a different perspective, and they allow me to also see that, hey, if this is not working out and it sounds like maybe it's not working out and you're having a hard time, there's another world out there. And that's what I mean by support. You know, you want to have every support that you can get, whether it's your friends outside of the industry, in the industry, your family, your manager, maybe your mentor.
Do you ever feel like people just want to be friends with you because of who you are? I mean, I'm a fan of your dad, or I'm a fan of your mom, and then, you know, I want to hang out with you because I want to, you know, get close to them.
Yeah, and I learned that the hard way, actually. So I learned that when I was in secondary school. So those were the years that I was learning a lot about myself and about people and about my family. And I think that's what made me who I am today, because I was able to fall, get back up and learn, okay, so, you know who you are, but there'll be people that will
take advantage of
take advantage. Yeah,
I mean, people tend to think that you have it easy, you know, you've got famous parents who do this, and then, you know, it's what the Hollywood term nepo babies. Have you heard of that term?
Yes
so that's the thing, that, you know, I personally, I guess because I also have children, and I would think that, you know, I don't want this to happen to them.
Yeah.
And I worry too for them. And, you know, have your parents ever told you how they feel, or like their fears about, you know, you, this? All of you growing up in the limelight in that sense?
I don't believe they have, you know, specifically like sat us down or anything like that. But all they've told us is just to be who we are. And they are so supportive in whatever we do. So just their parenting was good enough to show us that, hey, we can do whatever we want as long as we respect people, as long as we have the, you know, all the values of a person that wants to work hard and wants to be kind to everybody. And, you know, just I just want to say that for those people that do talk about us, you know, or your children, and assume that we have everything easy, I try to think of it that we're born into a life that we cannot really choose, you know, and all of us have different advantages and disadvantages, and all we can do is to try to make the best out of it. And I know sometimes, yeah, some people may seem that they're more successful, but they might be hiding something, or they might be suffering in something that we don't know. And whatever we see on the screens, or whatever we hear in, you know, the audios, those are just parts of their life. Yeah.
I've always wondered what it's like having so many children. I mean, five.
Five.
And then you're like, I have two, and I'm just like, as a parent, I'm like, oh my goodness, you know. And sometimes I think for many of us who have fewer children, we want the best for them, so we focus a lot of attention on each child. But when you have five, it's quite impossible to be able to devote the same kind of energy and attention to each and every one. And you being sort of smack in the middle, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever suffered from the middle child syndrome?
So that is a great question, because I've gotten that so many times. But I feel that I can relate to it to an extent, but at the same time, no. Like I can't relate to it because I am the only girl being in the middle. So being the only girl also puts a different limelight.
Right.
Puts a different pressure, right. I would say also. Because I feel that my brothers can do whatever they want and not get criticized for it. But whatever I do, it's like, da-da-da-da-da.
Really? Like what?
I feel, I mean, I will say, of course, parents will always be protective of, you know, a daughter. So I feel that that is always, will always be there. But from an outsider coming into my family, I feel that I have more pressure. In a way, yeah. To be good, to do good, to be a certain way, and to uphold my entire family.
Is that self-inflicted, or did your parents...
That's like, the thing.
Or like, your parents actually said something to you, or...
No. I think I'm very critical of myself, and I've learned that. I realize I'm very critical of myself. But, and I used to care a lot about what people said, but I try not to.
Sucks. That sucks. I mean, I do too. I used to, I mean, at your age, I too, you know, you get very lost and you get very scared.
Yeah.
And then especially when you're, you know, doing what you do, it seems like other people's opinions matter.
Yeah, I guess so.
And you growing up in the world of social media and YouTube and all this, I imagine it's worse.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like I want to throw my phone away. Like, my dream, honestly, is to just live by a beach house. Like, get a beach house, live by the beach, have my family there with my cats.
Don't you think it's contradicting? Because you want to be anonymous or in that sense, but yet the work that you do...
Yes, exactly.
You know, like, you need to... be yeah. famous, I guess, right? To be able to do the work that you do.
Yeah.
And you need to be seen and you need to be heard.
Yeah.
So isn't it very conflicting?
It is very conflicting. And that is the thing when it comes to what I love doing is like fashion and, you know, music and just like being, yeah, I guess being in front of the camera.
Right.
But my private life, sometimes I just wish I could be in a beach house.
I mean, I feel the same way, yeah, you know?
But you can never get best of both worlds, you yes. know? We can try.
Yes.
But like you say, that in this world of Instagram, YouTube, social media, we'll all have to somehow be out there. Yeah. If I feel like if people ask you if you have Instagram and you say no, that's a weird thing now. You know? It's like, whoa, you don't have Instagram?
I mean, I don't know what's the generation after you going to be like? Have you ever thought about what it's going to be like for your kids?
I know.
Have you?
I'm going to raise them in a beach house.
For real?
I don't know.
Is that why your parents brought you to Indonesia? Brought the whole family to Indonesia?
No, because my dad had a job offer there.
Oh, right, yeah. right. Okay. Yeah. You would raise your kids in a beach house.
But, I mean, that's just something that I want. But what I want now is different. You know, we all want different things. But how I want my future to be is like that. How the future will be for my kids, we're not sure yet. All we can do is try to make it better.
I mean, let's talk a little bit about, just now we were talking about your support group and all that. So what about your romantic interest? Is there a romantic interest in your life?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
On 2 days ago, it was our 1 year anniversary.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I mean, I think this is one of those questions that you must get as well, right?
Like, I actually don't.
You don't?
So when it comes to my relationship, I'm okay with people asking, but people don't ask a lot. But when they find out I am seeing somebody, then like, wow.
You know, back in the day, I mean, during my time, it's going to sound so boomerish again. During my time, right, where you don't have like social media and camera phones and, you know, you could have a boyfriend and say that, oh, this is my good friend.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody ever finds out, right? Because, you know, nobody takes photos, nobody uploads it, and nobody sees you holding hands and doing stuff. But then now it's impossible. Like, if you go on a date, like, where can you go? It's Singapore, right? You can't go on a date and not have anyone see you. So,
yeah.
So it is a little bit more open now.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain extent, I feel that because it's so open that people are no longer interested. So I don't know.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know how it's like for you at this age and in during this time of camera phones and all that and social media that, you know, you feel like there's nothing to hide already.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Back in the day, like, everybody's like
trying to hide something, keep a secret. Yeah.
Right? And then now it's like,
now it's a different kind of hiding.
Okay, tell me about this world of yours, because I'm obviously, like, you know, I talk about you being the first generation Z, and I think there will be listeners who are curious too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how you were mentioning about the hiding and, you know, you're calling you're seeing as a friend first. So that was, I guess, in your time, as you say, but nowadays, and I've done this before, and I did it also, with my current boyfriend. So when we're kind of talking to somebody, I mean, if you guys can relate, then that's great. When I was talking with my boyfriend in the beginning stages, I would keep it a down low, kind of like how you mentioned hiding it, but we sneak pictures. So it's like hinting. It's, people call it soft launching.
Soft launching.
So when it's like you talk to them as much as you can and you hide it. But when you're ready to put it out there and say, okay, I am officially talking to somebody, whether or not they're exclusive or not, to say that you're officially talking to one person, people would just usually sneak launch. I mean, slowly launch. So take a picture, but covering the face.
Ah.
And this would happen for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And then people would start like, oh my gosh, who's that? Oh my gosh, you're seeing somebody. And then you launch it on the main post.
Okay. And I mean, I guess at this age, sometimes you see someone and then it doesn't quite work out. And then mm-hmm. you switch your boyfriend. I mean, you meet someone else mm-hmm. and all that. I mean, is it like okay now? I mean, like back in the day, I mean, again, I'm going to sound so old, but it's like, you know, you have one boyfriend and you're expected to marry this guy, right? I mean, has that changed now? Are people more accepting of the fact that, hey, as a young person, you know, you meet different people, you know, you don't stick to one all the time?
Yeah, it's more accepting. I feel like some cultures will probably still have that. Okay, you meet one person, you're going to marry them. But nowadays, I feel that everybody is accepting of like, okay, this is your boyfriend. And they understand that
sometimes it may
or may
not. Out.
Yeah, it may or may not happen into marriage or anything. And, you know, you might get another boyfriend or girlfriend and that's okay.
Mm.
And I actually prefer this in a way because it allows you to understand what love is. It allows you to also understand what you like in a relationship, what you don't like in a relationship. And I feel that relationships are a great place for you to learn and to grow because the other person can teach you so much. Yeah.
So then let's talk about your relationships. Like, where do you meet your boyfriends? I mean, being in your industry, mm-hmm. I guess, like, I would assume you meet them within your industry.
No.
What? I mean, because I'm married to one who's in the industry, right? So, what do you mean?
So, I've only had... Wow, I'm putting this out there. So, I've only had two boyfriends.
Oh.
And my first boyfriend was when I was 18.
Okay.
And it wasn't because of any rules or anything like that. I was just trying to figure myself out first. And I met him when I was in LA. So he was my first boyfriend. I met him in LA. He was American and we were doing long distance. Unfortunately, that didn't work out, but we ended on good terms.
Long distance? How does that work?
Communication is key.
Like how? Like FaceTime? I don't know.
Yeah, FaceTime, do scheduled calls. So,
and it's like a different time zone.
Yeah. So that's the hard part. So my current boyfriend, I met him actually a while ago.
Okay.
He used to actually train with my brothers, but I didn't know this. And my dad used to train him. And then only last year, 2021, we started to talk as friends and reconnect. And that was how my current relationship started. But he's in the UK. So we have long distance again.
Wow.
And... yeah, communication is key. Do phone calls whenever you can, but also have your own space for both of you to grow. And what we also talk about is that I believe that if you really love somebody, you know that you should be willing to try. To try long distance, even if it doesn't work out, don't let the what ifs kind of like pull you down to not even try it. Yeah.
Okay, so we assume that the hardest part about long-distance relationships is, I guess, not being physically there. Yeah.
And a lot of my friends actually worry that if they find somebody and that person, you know, leaves and it becomes a long-distance relationship, they somehow for sure know it's not going to work out. But for me, I'm like, why not? You've never done it before.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something I cannot wrap my mind around because I...
Have you been in a long distance?
I wouldn't call it long distance. I mean, my husband for a time after we got together, he worked in China.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also didn't quite get to see each other all the time, right? I mean, we do your... we in China, they use the Weixin. So you use WeChat.
Oh, yes.
And then WeChat. You do your FaceTime, like your FaceTime calls and all that. But I mean, we're in the same time zone, so it's still okay.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, if he's filming, you can only do it after work and I got to do it after work. And back then, I found that it was good in a sense because you make an effort to communicate every day.
Yeah.
Right? Because you set a time and then you meet, you call, and then you have that scheduled call all the time.
Yes.
And then you are connecting. Mm-hmm. And then and then now that he's back, you know, and then sometimes you don't even get to see each other.
Oh.
I mean, I noticed that. Because, you know, he works till late and, you know, my timing is different. And mm-hmm. and you don't have the time to sort of sit down and just talk to each mm-hmm. other. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I did find that, hey, you know, back then, we actually had a lot more to talk about than now because mm-hmm. we're physically here together. Yeah. But I have to admit that there were times, especially after having kids, that when he was not here, it was hard because, you know, you need that physical presence. Mm-hmm. Actually, now that you're asking me this question, I think it's more for the kids. His physical presence for the kids, mm-hmm. right?
But you're okay with not having the physical presence?
I mean, I was. And then until, because after we got married, this happened, right? So yeah. you don't know otherwise. Mm-hmm. And then now that he's back and I'm so reliant on him being here now that I don't know what it's going to be like if he has to go.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like back then, because of the way we got together and then he was already, mm-hmm. we already had this sort of a relationship, then I felt like I was okay. And then, but I did notice that the children would sort of be a little bit, have a little bit of tantrums or mm-hmm. it's a little bit different when he's not around. And then when he comes back and then when he leaves for, you know, he comes back for a week and then he leaves, the children also, they do yeah. act up. And now that after with COVID, right, and he's back here, and then, you know, we are all so used to having him. I'm not sure I can do the long distance.
I mean, it is when you are with someone for a long time. Before my boyfriend, well, his name is Josh. Okay. So before Josh left to go back to the UK, he was actually here. So I was so used to him being here for almost 9 months or so, and right. so used to seeing him on the weekend, you know, going on dates or family,
right.
like dinners and stuff. And when he left, yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, I lost like a part of me. Yeah. Like it has that feeling, and now I don't know what to do with myself. But slowly with time, you start to learn and have your routine of like, okay, being alone again, or like just doing your own thing again. And the exciting part comes the next time you meet.
Yes.
The planning for the next time you meet. And I find this always the most fun because when you meet, you have so much to talk about.
Yes.
And then it kind of like it kind of like sparks that relationship up again. It's yes. like having a little date and both of you start to have those flutters of like, oh, I'm nervous, I'm seeing her or him again.
And you make the time so count,
yes,
isn't it? Because exactly. you have so little time together and you want to make it mean mm-hmm. something, right?
And you don't want to, you don't care about the bad times or the fights or the disagreements anymore because the both of you have the same idea of just wanting to see each other. And sometimes the fights, the disagreements, the arguments stem from just missing each other.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm. I mean, hearing from you now, I think it's giving some people a little bit more courage not to be resistant to the idea.
I mean, just go for it. You know, just go ahead because you never know what's going to happen. It might just lead into something beautiful and you never know if you don't try.
You know, the interesting thing is I actually had a physiotherapist who married her boyfriend like long distance. Like, all they've ever had was long distance relationship, and mm-hmm. they got married. And at that time, remember, I was just like, "How?"
And right? I've known I know some friends that do long distance for 5 years, haven't seen each other within the COVID period as well, and got married.
And like, just stay committed to each other yeah. throughout this time. I think it's also, I guess,
it takes a lot of gut
and a lot of love.
Yeah,
isn't it? And I guess discipline too. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, discipline.
Okay, so has your romantic partners ever influenced you in the work that you do?
They give me inspiration to write songs.
Okay, let's go into this songwriting part because, you know, one of the things that, you know, I talked about in my introduction mm-hmm. is that, well, it's no surprise you're a model, but, you know, songwriting, singing is not, it didn't run in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so to do something like that takes a lot of guts and courage and,
yeah.
and you're making it happen for yourself.
I was so scared.
So tell us about how it all started. I mean, I'm sure you've said mm-hmm. this story before, but I want to hear it myself. Like,
okay, so it started as a 19 year old Yeah, 19-year-old birthday resolution.
Oh.
So I've always loved music, you know, all different kinds of genres. And when I turned 19, or I think just before I turned 19, I told myself, why not record, just for fun, one of the songs that I wrote. And that actually happened to be Time Frame, my first single that I put out. So I went to a studio that I knew through some friends, and they were the first people that helped me in the music industry. Estelle Fly, she was one of the musicians that I looked up to at that time. Yao was also with me at that time. He's an amazing musician and songwriter. And when I was going to put out the song, I just asked a lot of people, okay, how am I going to put it out? Do I want to put it out? Because initially I was just going to keep it for myself. But then I thought, why not? Just put it out just for fun. And someone from Universal got a hold of the song. And
wait, hang on. Did you already put it out?
No, I hadn't put it out because I was asking people, like, what should I do with it?
So you've already recorded it?
I've recorded it, yeah.
And then it's just sort of sitting there,
yeah,
in somebody's hard disks.
In my
in your hard disk. Okay, so no one has heard it except for the people who helped you record it.
Yes.
Okay, and then?
And then I was like, should I put it out? Should I not? And Universal got a hold of it. And I didn't expect things to start rolling. From there, it began like, okay, let's talk about the music. See how you want to put it out. Okay, let's talk about a contract. Okay, do you want to get signed? And everything just went by so quickly that I signed with Universal. And I put out Time Frame, and that's how it started. Yeah.
How did the song get to the people in Universal?
So I knew Nikki, who used to work at Universal. She was a friend that I met, I believe, at an event. And that's how it got to people.
Wow, this is really like putting it, you know, like sending the message to the universe sort of a thing. Because I guess for like even like Lady Gaga, the way she was discovered is she actually had to put her music out first.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, someone hears it and picks
but
up.
But I was not, I honestly did not have the intention of making it big just because I didn't think that I could. And when I asked for Nikki's advice and like, what should I, how should I put it out? Like, what do I do with this now? Because there's so many, you know, logistics behind putting out music on YouTube or Spotify. Mm. And yeah, then from there, Universal got a hold of it. And I was like, what?
Oh, so tell me about the process. I know you wrote the song in a taxi.
Yes.
That's the you know, I read that in your interview.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had a melody. And then how, what happens? Okay, you have a melody, you have the lyrics, then...
Then I wrote it down.
Okay.
And then I find the BPM. So that BPM is beats per minute. And that's how you start to produce a track. Yeah. So you kind of like have to, you know, use tracks, production, work with your producer and make the song from that BPM.
Mm, so aside from writing lyrics, have you always enjoyed writing?
Yeah, I've always enjoyed writing when I have inspiration, because sometimes I get writer's block and it can be such a pain. But yeah, I've always enjoyed writing, but I realize I love being in the studio, just helping to produce as well. Because on my other songs that I'm currently working on, I love helping my producer, like, okay, which beats, which keys, what should we do, experimental things. It's always a fun... It's always like a fun playground for me because you just start to learn so much about music and the different areas that you can dive into.
Do you play any instruments?
So I used to play the triangle in primary school. And then I used to play the guitar in secondary school, but I forgot. And then I self-taught myself the keyboard, but I stopped.
Oh.
Yeah.
So now you...
No, I don't.
It's very interesting because I always assume that in order to write your own songs, you gotta kind of like know how to play an instrument.
I just feel like you just gotta have whatever creativity is in your brain and just put it out there. Yeah. You know, I feel music can come from a lot of things. And just because you don't play an instrument doesn't mean that you can't make music in your head. If that makes sense.
It does. It's just, I'm wondering where you get your inspiration from. You get your sounds from.
A lot of inspiration comes from, I mean, for writing, it comes from things that I see, people that I talk to, but the sound and the melody just comes randomly. It's hard to explain, but it's just like, maybe you have a melody in your head right now. Yeah. You just got to embrace it.
So I know you said that just now earlier on that you actually did this on your own without telling your parents. And then, you know, it was also a way to sort of prove that you can do things on your own without their help.
Yeah. And prove to myself that, hey, whatever other people are saying, you don't have to listen to them because you're making your own steps, you know, into the future. And I guess I want to prove to them and prove to myself. And so when we released Time Frame, we had a press conference and I invited my parents, and that's when they saw how big the whole music career direction for me was going.
You mean you signed on with Universal without them knowing?
Well, I have my godfather with me by my side throughout the entire thing. He's kind of like my second dad.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you were no longer a minor then, right? I suppose
I was 19.
You need an adult to sign the contract for you.
Yeah, you need to be 21 to be. Yeah, so right? My godfather was there.
So he kept it a secret too, from your dad.
The great part was he's the person that I would go to drop hints for my family so that they don't get a shock.
Right.
But when I tell them, then they're like, "Oh, no wonder you've been going out so much, or like coming back late, going to the studio."
I see. So it all happened, and how do you feel that where this is going for you?
I feel like it's just the beginning because I'm only about 2 years into my music career or so, and there's still so much to do with me becoming an artist in COVID. Unfortunately, you know, it was bad timing, but because things are starting to open up, I can't wait to do shows. I've done a couple shows already, and it's just so exciting, the feeling and the thrill of it. And I want to do things overseas, more collaborations, and to put out an album in the future.
So now you're still modeling, and then you have your music career, and you still do YouTube videos?
I do YouTube videos when I can, yeah. I have this series called Iman Tries.
Oh, tell us about
that. So it's just about me doing a bunch of different things that I've never done before or that I've never done in a while. So I did rock climbing, bouldering, wake surfing, and some... Oh, bungee jumping.
Oh, my. Yeah. The one at Sentosa?
Yeah. So I've done quite a lot of things, and hope that will be a series that I hope to continue and try different things.
Oh, why do you want to try different things?
Because I feel that I'm such an adventurous person that I love to try new things anyways. And I hope that this series can either provide people, you know, of things of what they can do, or to give them inspiration of like, let's just do it. Let's just take the risk and try it. Because life is so short. I feel that you should do whatever you want to do that makes you happy, but also what challenges you and scares you, because you never know the thrill of it all. Like doing the bungee jump, I was so scared. But after that, I just felt a huge rush of adrenaline and I wanted to do it again. And I would never have done it if I didn't have my best friend who I did it with. But also to have this push of like, Iman, you're filming a YouTube video, do it.
Wow. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so is there anything that you, like right now, that it still scares you that you haven't tried yet?
That's the thing. I feel like I am scared of things like maybe insects. I say I'm not, but I could be. That's the thing. Like, right. I could be scared of jumping out of an airplane, but I could not be scared, if that makes sense.
Wow.
I don't know what I'm scared of until...
It happens, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean...
But I know I'm scared of ghosts. That's one thing I'm scared of.
They don't exist.
You don't believe in ghosts?
I don't.
Oh.
Have you met any?
I don't know.
I mean, you can't be scared of something that you've never met, right?
Maybe I have met a ghost before, but I just believe that spirits exist. So that scares me, you know. Yeah. I mean, not in the good spirits. Okay, hello. But the scary ones, yeah. I've heard a lot of stories, that's all. That's why.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Because I mean, it's not that I don't believe. I do also believe that there are spirits and all that. It's just, That's why I say I have never done a horror film before. I think I don't know how to be scared of ghosts. Like, if I have to act scared of, like, ghosts, I don't know how to do it because I've never had that experience.
Have you gone to Halloween Horror Nights?
I have, but the kind of jump scares are, like... I mean, jump scares, I get scared, right? So you get startled, but you know the kind of horror films, especially the Thais are really good at it. And it's kind that the lurks
Thai
and,
like, Indonesia.
Right? So that kind of, and when you're acting, obviously it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think that's a genre of film that I, of TV show as well, that I've never tried. And I don't know if I'll be any good at it.
But let's say you were sleeping. And a ghost just, like, stands in front of your bed. Would you not be scared?
I don't know what that is like, you see, because I've never experienced it before.
So that's the thing of, like, you don't know if you're scared until you're there.
Right, yes.
So it's kind of the same thing with me with other things.
And it's a lot of it is your imagination too, right? Because you're imagining, and then it seems to happen.
Yeah.
And I guess I never... put myself in that position where I would imagine these things.
I guess so. I have a wild imagination, so maybe that's why.
I wonder where that came from.
I don't know. I have weird dreams too, so yeah.
You know, I look at you and I think that you're so brave and, you know, you're so willing to try things. And, like, you talk about this bungee jumping. Like, I guess if there was a TV show now that asked me to do it, I'll probably say, can I not do it?
I mean, we all have fears. And of course, I was like double checking everything. I asked them, did anything happen? I asked them, am I locked in? Is my friend locked in? What is the, what happens if it does snap and will we fall into the water? You know, I do think about the what ifs and to prepare myself. But that can only do so much.
I guess I'm not in that mental space, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious because I'm looking at your generation and seeing so much courage and bravery, and especially because you are growing up in a world where anything is possible, right? Mm-hmm. With YouTube, with this, with that, you can make anything happen. So it feels almost like nothing scares you. Your generation of young people, right? Like, you're gonna, like, just set the world on fire. The kind of feeling I get.
Yeah.
What is something that worries you?
I mean, to give you an answer that isn't so obvious, to me, I feel that something that I am scared of, at least a little bit, is to be alone. Yeah.
What do you mean? It doesn't feel like you're alone, isn't it? You've got, like, your followers and your fans.
That is the thing, because you can feel alone or lonely in a place filled with people. And for you to not be alone is if people understand you, if people accept you, if people respect you. And I feel with so much happening in the world and we're always moving and doing the next thing and social media, like you say, is just everywhere. How do we know if we're really connecting with people? Because we are connecting with them virtually, but on a... you know, heart-to-heart basis, I feel like sometimes that connection is just not the same. Yeah, and I guess that is why I keep my friends very close to me, because they show me just a different world. Yeah.
Before we wrap up, I do want you to share a little bit more about your belief in mental health and wellness, because you did say that it's a very big part of what you believe in. And, you know, how do you stay, I guess, mentally and physically healthy?
So this has been a learning journey for me because, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, being in the fashion industry at such a young age, it did take a toll on my mental health. and my, you know, well-being. And that's when I started to dive a little bit deeper into, okay, what do I do? How do I take care of myself? And I studied psychology, mm-hmm. and I have a degree in it. And that's when I took an internship at this nonprofit organization called Impart to help children, youths. And that is where I also learned a lot that in Singapore, we only see one side of things. There are so many children and youths out there who don't have the lives that we have, yet we are complaining about it.
Mm.
But yet they push through a lot. And how my journey started with mental health just began out of my own curiosity of how to be better. And I also feel that it is such a big thing right now, because with a lot of things happening with work and with travels, with social media, the only thing that sometimes I can control is how I react to things. How can I be better in, you know, being me? Yeah.
So what do you do then? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you do? So you know that it's important to you, but then, like, is there any thing that you practice?
Yeah, so exercise. This is very cliche, but yeah, exercise is an outlet. But sometimes that doesn't work.
Yes.
You know? Our emotions bottle up, and then I start to think, oh no, exercise is not working. What do I do? And that's when I always say, tomorrow's a new day, or Monday is a new week. And so I give this, let's say, a week of my time to feel the emotions, cry it out if I need to, be down if I need be. And then when I'm starting to slowly feel better, take the little steps, you know, okay, have a good breakfast, have a good smoothie, go for a walk, and then start the Monday fresh. Those, I know it's not a huge impact of like, okay, next day I'm perfect, but it takes a lot of I feel resilience to push yourself into a better place. And of course, I love listening to Jay Shetty. He's on Spotify podcast a lot about mental health and well-being. Yeah, I feel like he's my therapist.
And in terms of diet as well, like, do you think that plays a part?
Yeah, I definitely do, because I realized this is so random, but when I cut out fast foods, or at least a little bit, because I still have some, mm-hmm. It did play an impact on how I felt after eating. Because I used to feel a little bit more sluggish and lazy, but now I feel like I have the energy for the whole day.
But you're a vegan, isn't it?
So I used to be a vegan, but now I'm pescatarian.
Okay, yeah. Tell us a little bit more. Like, what's, because when I hear that you're a vegan, I'm wondering, like, does that mean that you don't use leather bags, you can't wear leather clothes? Mm-hmm. And when you're a model, I guess it's hard, yeah. right, to have that, to make that choice.
So when I was vegan, how I transitioned was, first of all, I never really liked chicken or meat. And a friend of mine showed me documentaries, and she was a vegan. And that's how it starts, the documentaries. And yes. I love animals. So, yeah, that's how it started. And, yeah, I mean, in the fashion industries, I cannot just say, no, I don't want to wear fur because I'm a vegan.
Yeah.
But there are different types of vegans, I feel. But I try to separate my work and my belief of, like, my veganism in that sense, because I am doing a job, in a sense. But what I do at home is my lifestyle.
Right.
But I went out of veganism because I realized parts of my nutrition wasn't up to par, because when I was in Paris, there wasn't a lot of food options at that time. And so I just thought, okay, maybe just have a fish. And that's when it started, and I became pescatarian.
And pescatarian means that?
Pescatarian means that I just eat fish, rice. You can have dairy and cheese, but I still keep those out. Yeah. Mm, okay. So I'm a vegan, but I eat fish.
Right. I mean, I think it's important, this diet as well. And for me, according to my blood type, I'm supposed to be vegetarian.
Oh.
Ideally, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just means that if we consume like vegetables and no meat, our bodies function more efficiently than other blood types. So I also did notice with that choice that I make, if I were to eat more vegetables and to have like a plant-based diet, that I feel a lot better. I get a lot more energy.
Yeah.
I think my skin's better. Everything's better. But then I find that it can be really difficult to
it is difficult to
execute.
Yeah.
You know, and especially if you're traveling and this and that.
And that was the trouble that I was having as well. But I mean, now there's so many vegan options, which is great.
Really?
But yeah. I feel like if you go on the airplane, you can just choose the vegetarian.
Oh, vegan. Yeah. Which is not always yummy, but...
But I mean, there's more options, I would say, compared to a couple years ago. And that was when I was vegan and suffering with like the decisions. Yes. Because I feel that maybe, you know, when you would go out with family, you would have like the hard decision, or being the person that's like, okay, I'm vegan or vegetarian, I can't eat at this place. It would always feel so... hard,
and you
like
don't
a burden.
And yeah, you don't want to be trouble to your friends who like arrange for a gathering, and then you're like, oh, sorry, I don't eat this, I don't eat that.
And I feel that no matter what you eat or what your diet is, everybody is different. So you can be a vegan some days. I've heard people doing that. Mm-hmm. You can be, you know, a meat eater all the time, but have specific diets, you know.
So I've got a friend who is a vegetarian every Thursday.
Yeah.
And Thanksgiving is also Thursdays, right? So I'm like, sorry, but there's no mock turkey.
So it's like, it's everybody has their own decision, their own life. What works for them will work for them.
Well, it's been great talking to you. And
you.
I guess before you go, we want to know what's upcoming for you.
So I am working on my music. And I am definitely hoping to release them soon, hopefully after Chinese New Year, if that's a little bit more specific for you guys.
Okay.
And I am working on an EP as well. But before that, I hope to put out more singles. And next year, I am also planning to do a little bit more fashion stuff, maybe some work in Fashion Week. We'll see about that. And more Iman Tries will hopefully be coming as well.
All right. So if people are interested to find out more about you and your work, where can they find you?
You can find me at imanfandi17 on Instagram, and then imanfandi on TikTok, Twitter, YouTube. What other social media? Facebook.
Facebook is like for the boomers.
But everybody still needs Facebook in a sense. It's where you get the invites.
Oh, really?
Of like... friend invites of yeah, my boyfriend still does that.
Everyone's just telling me that Facebook is like, you know, if you're on Facebook, it represents that generation. Like, your generation is like no longer on Facebook.
I still, but Facebook is connected to Instagram, so.
We've now come to the end of this episode. Please give us a 5-star review and remember to share this with your friends. If you're listening to this on audio, know that there's a video version on YouTube and there's also a video version available on Spotify now. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye!
This was the Zodapop podcast.